stories of Edgar Allan Poe. Not exactly the boy next door. Tell you tales of heart and he'll play with your mind. If you haven't heard of him, you must be dead or blind. These are the stories of Edgar Allan Poe. Not exactly the boy next door. He'll tell you about Usher, whose eyes burn in his mind. His love for his dear sister, his death would drive him wild. The murder of a stranger, the murder of a friend. The callings from the pits of hell that never seem to end. These are the stories of Edgar Allan Poe. Not exactly the boy next door. These are the stories of Edgar Allan Poe. Not exactly the boy next door. Diabolic image of the city and the sea. The chaos and the carnage that resides you within me. Decapitation, poisonings, hellish not a boy. You won't need 3D glasses to pass beyond the store. Edgar Allan Poe. Not exactly the door next door. No Nosferatu visit, brass and naked women here. A mine on furlough, a mine on bed is all we have here. Troop fried rank tanks flooded to the stage. Leave the expectations home. And listen to the stories of Edgar Allan Poe. We give you the soliloquy, the raven at the door. Flame and pencil, moving walls, no equilibrium. No ballast, no bombast, the unvarnished truth we got. Mind swoons guiltily, cooking ravens in a pot. Edgar Allan Poe, not attacking the boy next door. Telltale heart, erotic cast, valley of unrest, a conqueror, worm devouring soul. Keep the best for last. Bring the Annie Lee, his post buried alive, regretting his beloved death. And all the many guys. These are the stories of Edgar Allan Poe. Not exactly the boy next door. Edgar Allan Poe, not exactly the boy next door. These are the stories of Edgar Allan Poe.
Hear the sledges with the bells, silver bells. What a world of merriment their melody foretells. How they tinkle, tinkle, tinkle in the icy air of night. While the stars that oversprinkle all the heavens seem to twinkle with a crystalline delight. Keeping time, time, time in a sort of runic rhyme to the tintinnabulation that so musically wells from the bells, 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 from the jingling and the tinkling of the bells. Hear the mellow wedding bells, golden bells. What a world of happiness their harmony foretells. Through the balmy air of night, how they ring out their delight. From the molten, golden notes and all in tune. What a liquid ditty floats to the turtle dove that listens while she gloats on the moon. Oh, from out the sounding cells, what a gush of euphony voluminously wells. How it swells, how it dwells on the future, how it tells of the rapture that impels to the swinging and the ringing of the bells, 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 of the bells, 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 to the rhyming and the chiming of the bells. Hear the loud alarum bells, brazen bells. What a tale of terror now their turbulency tells in the startled ear of night. How they scream out their affright, too much horrified to speak, they can only shriek, shriek out of tune, in a clamorous appealing to the mercy of the fire, in a mad expostulation with the deaf and frantic fire, leaping higher, higher, higher with a desperate desire and a resolute endeavor, now, now to sit or never by the side of the pale-faced moon. Oh, the bells, 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 what a tale their terror tells of despair. How they clang and clash and roar, what a horror they outpour on the bosom of the palpitating air. Yet the ear, it fully knows, by the twanging and the clanging, how the danger ebbs and flows. Yet the ear distinctly tells, in the jangling and the wrangling, how the danger sinks and swells, by the sinking or the swelling in the anger of the bells, of the bells, of the bells, 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 in the clamor and the clangor of the bells. Hear the tolling of the bells, iron bells. What a world of solemn thought their monody compels. In the silence of the night, how we shiver with affright at the melancholy menace of their tone. For every sound that floats from the rust within their throats is a groan, and the people, ah, the people, they that dwell up in the steeple all alone, and who tolling, tolling, tolling in that muffled monotone, feel a glory in so rolling on the human heart a stone. They are neither man nor woman, they are neither brute nor human, they are ghouls, and their king it is who tolls, and he rolls, 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 rolls a paean from the bells, and his merry bosom swells with the paean of the bells, and he dances, and he yells, keeping time, 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 in a sort of runic rhyme to the paean of the bells, of the bells, keeping time, 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 in a sort of runic rhyme to the throbbing of the bells, of the bells, 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 to the sobbing of the bells, keeping time, 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 as he knells, 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 in a happy runic rhyme, to the rolling of the bells, 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 to the tolling of the bells, 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 to the moaning and the groaning of the bells.
Death had long devastated the country. No pestilence had ever been so fatal or so hideous. Blood was its avatar and its seal. The redness of the horror of blood. There were sharp pains and sudden dizziness, and then profuse bleeding at the pores. The scarlet stains upon the body, and especially upon the face of the victim, with the pest bands which shut him out from the aid and sympathy of his fellow men. The whole seizure, progress, and termination of the disease were the incidents of half an hour. But the Prince Prospero was happy and dauntless and sagacious. When his dominions were half depopulated, he summoned to his presence a thousand hale and light-hearted friends from among the knights and dames of his court, and with these retired to the deep seclusion of his castellated abbey. This was an extensive and magnificent structure, the creation of the prince's own eccentric yet august taste. A strong and lofty wall girdled it in. This wall had gates of iron. The courtiers, having entered, brought furnaces and massy hammers and welded the bolts. They resolved to leave means neither of ingress nor egress. To sudden impulses of despair or of frenzy from within. The abbey was amply provisioned. With such precautions, the courtiers might bid defiance to contagion. The external world could take care of itself. In the meantime, it was folly to grieve or to think. The prince had provided all the appliances of pleasure. There were buffoons, there were improvisatori, there were ballet dancers, there were musicians, there was beauty, there was wine. All ease and security were within. Without was the Red Death. It was toward the close of the fifth or sixth month of his seclusion, and while the pestilence raged most furiously abroad, that the Prince Prospero entertained his thousand friends at a masked ball of the most unusual magnificence. It was a voluptuous scene, this masquerade. But first, let me tell you of the rooms in which it was held. There were seven. In the middle of each, a tall and narrow Gothic window looked out upon the closed corridor, which pursued the windings of the suite. These windows were of stained glass, whose color varied in accordance with the prevailing hue of the decorations of the chamber into which it opened. That at the eastern extremity was hung, for example, in blue, and vividly blue were its windows. The second chamber was purple in its ornaments and tapestries, and here the panes were purple. The third was green throughout, and so were the casements. The fourth was furnished and lighted with orange. The fifth with white. The sixth with violet. The seventh apartment was closely shrouded in black velvet tapestries that hung all over the ceiling and down the walls, falling in heavy folds upon a carpet of the same material and hue. But in this chamber only, the color of the windows failed to correspond with the decorations. The panes here were scarlet, a deep blood color. In the corridors that followed the suite, there stood, opposite to each window, a heavy tripod bearing a brazier of fire. This projected its rays through the tinted glass and so glaringly illumined the room. And thus were produced a multitude of gaudy and fantastic appearances. But in the western or black chamber, the effect of the firelight that streamed upon the dark hangings through the blood-tinted panes was ghastly in the extreme. It produced so wild a look upon the countenances of those who entered, that there were few of the company bold enough to set foot within its precincts at all. It was in this apartment also that there stood against the western wall a gigantic clock of ebony. Its pendulum swung to and fro with a dull, heavy, monotonous clang. And when the minute hand made the circuit of the face, the hour was to be stricken, there came from the brazen lungs of the clock a sound which was clear and loud and deep and exceedingly musical, but of so peculiar a note and emphasis that at each lapse of an hour, the musicians of the orchestra were constrained to pause in their performance to hearken to the sound. Thus the waltzers perforce ceased their evolutions, and there was a brief disconcert of the whole company. And while the chimes of the clock yet rang, it was observed that the giddiest grew pale, and the more aged and sedate passed their hands over their brows as if in confused reverie or meditation. But when the echoes had fully ceased, a light laughter at once pervaded the assembly. The musicians looked at each other and smiled, as if at their own nervousness and folly, and made whispering vows each to the other that the next chiming of the clock would produce in them no similar emotion. And then, after the lapse of 60 minutes, there came yet another chiming of the clock, and there were the same disconcert and tremulousness and meditation as before. But in spite of these things, it was a magnificent revel. The tastes of the Duke were peculiar. He had a fine eye for color and effects. He disregarded the decor of mere fashion. His plans were bold and fiery, and his conception glowed with barbaric luster. There are some who would have thought him mad. His followers felt that he was not. It was necessary to hear and see and touch him to be sure that he was mad. He had directed in great part the embellishments of the seven chambers upon occasion of this great fête. And it was his guiding taste which had given character to the masqueraders. He's sure they were grotesque. There was much glare and glitter and piquancy and phantasm. There were arabesque figures with unsuited limbs and appointments. There were delirious fancies such as the madman fashions. There was much of the beautiful, much of the wanton, much of the bizarre, something of the terrible, and not a little of that which might have excited disgust. To and fro in the seven chambers there stalked a multitude of dreams, and these, the dreams, writhed in and about, taking hue from the rooms, and causing the wild music of the orchestra to seem as the echo of their steps. Until at length there commenced the sounding of midnight upon the clock. And then the music ceased, as I have told, and the evolutions of the waltzers were quieted, and there was an uneasy cessation of all things as before. But now there were 12 strokes to be sounded by the bell of the clock. And thus it happened, perhaps, that more of thought crept with more of time into the meditations of the thoughtful among those who reveled. And thus do it happen, perhaps, that before the last echoes of the last chime had utterly sunk into silence, that there were many individuals in the crowd who had found leisure to become aware of the presence of a masked figure. The rumor of the new presence, having spread itself whisperingly around, there arose at length from the whole company a buzz or murmur expressive of disapprobation and surprise, then finally of terror, of horror, and of disgust. In an assembly of phantasms such as I have painted, it may well be supposed that no ordinary appearance could have created such sensation. In truth, the masquerade license of the night was nearly unlimited. But the figure in question had out-Heroded Herod and gone beyond the bounds of even the prince's indefinite decorum. There are chords in the hearts of the most reckless which cannot be touched without emotion. Even with the utterly lost, to whom life and death are equally jests, there are matters of which no jest can be made. The whole company, indeed, seemed now deeply to feel that in the costume and bearing of the stranger, neither wit nor propriety existed. The figure was tall and gaunt and shrouded from head to foot in the habiliments of the grave. The mask which concealed the visage was made so nearly to resemble the countenance of a stiffened corpse that the closest scrutiny must have had difficulty in detecting the cheat. And yet, all of this might have been endured, if not approved by the mad revelers around. But the mummer had gone so far as to assume the type of the Red Death. His vesture was dabbled in blood, and his broad brow with all the features of his face was besprinkled with a scarlet horror. When the eyes of Prince Prospero fell upon this spectral image, which with a slow and solemn movement, as if more fully to sustain its role, stalked to and fro among the waltzers, he was seen to be convulsed with a strong shudder, either of terror or distaste, whereupon his brow reddened with rage. "Who dares," he demanded harshly of his courtiers who stood near him, "who dares insult us with this blasphemous mockery? Seize him and unmask him, that we may know whom we have to hang at sunrise from the battlements." Within the eastern or blue chamber, in which stood the Prince Prospero as he uttered these words, they rang throughout the seven rooms loudly and clearly. For the prince was a bold and robust man, and the music had become hushed at the waving of his hand. At first, as he spoke, there was a slight rushing movement of pale courtiers in the direction of the intruder, who, at the moment, was also near at hand. And now, with deliberate and stately step, made closer approach to the speaker. But from a certain nameless awe with which the mad assumptions of the mummer had inspired the whole party, there were found none who put forth hand to seize him, so that, unimpeded, he passed within a yard of the prince's person. And while the vast assembly, as if with one impulse, shrank from the centers of the rooms to the walls, he made his way uninterruptedly, but with the same solemn and measured step, through the blue chamber to the purple, through the purple to the green, through the green to the orange, through this again to the white, and even thence to the violet. Every decided movement had been made to arrest him. It was then, however, that the Prince Prospero, maddening with rage and the shame of his own momentary cowardice, rushed hurriedly through the six chambers, while none followed him on account of a deadly terror that had seized upon all. He bore aloft a drawn dagger, and had approached in rapid impetuosity to within 3 or 4 feet of the cheating figure, when the latter, having attained the extremity of the velvet apartment, turned suddenly and confronted his pursuer. There was a sharp cry, the dagger dropped gleaming upon the sable carpet, upon which, instantly afterwards, fell prostrate in death the Prince Prospero. Then, summoning the wild courage of despair, a throng of the revelers at once threw themselves into the black apartment, and seizing the mummer, whose tall figure stood erect and motionless within the shadow of the ebony clock, gasped in unutterable horror at finding the grave cerements and the corpse-like mask, which they held with so violent a rudeness, untenanted by any tangible form. Acknowledged the presence of the Red Death. He had come like a thief in the night, and one by one dropped the revelers in the blood-bedewed halls of their revel, and died each in the despairing posture of his fall. The life of the ebony clock went out with the last of the gay, and the flames of the tripods expired, and darkness, decay, and the Red Death held illimitable dominion over all.
Edgar Allan Poe, y'all.
Poe, y'all.
Listen to me flow, y'all.
Flow, y'all.
Yo, it's Edgar Allan Poe with the flow so poetic. Melancholy wordsmith style, so phonetic. Got a raven on my shoulder. Gothic thematics. Demonic alcoholic. Multisyllabic. It's a habit, take a look, and I'm sure you'll find that the mechanics of rap are the mechanics of rhyme. And when we analyze the rhythm of the units to the meter, long, short, short, long, doesn't matter, look at either. An iamb is two syllables on stress, stress, which the words insane explain and delight all express. A trochee, on the other hand, goes stressed, unstressed. Words like coffee, crazy giant, so prepared to be impressed.
But Paul, what's an anapest?
Words like tambourine, cavalier, and and by that I mean two unstressed stress syllables in succession. That's our first lesson. Okay, any questions?
Flow like Poe.
I'm going hard on that tetrameter.
Flow like Poe.
I'm going hard on that tetrameter.
Flow like Poe.
I'm going hard on that tetrameter.
This is Lit Hop 101 with MC Edgar Allan Poe.
Flow like Poe.
I'm going hard on that tetrameter.
Flow like Poe.
I'm going hard on that tetrameter.
Flow like Poe.
I'm going hard on that tetrameter.
If you don't know, now you know. That meter means 2 feet, trimeter 3, tetrameter was 4, so pentameter must be 5 pairs of syllables, Shakespearean sonnets. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Now you got it. Unstressed stress, 5 times slow iambic. Stressed unstressed, watch me flip the dynamic like once upon a midnight dreary. That's the start of my couplet clearly. Trochaic octameter, rhythm might damage. The cadence is so quick, but I think your ear can manage. Mysterious sci-fi rhymes getting hotter. Drunk in the club, watch me holler at your daughter. Baltimore Ravens, that's my team. Original hipster, well it might seem. From the Bronx back to Boston, I'm rocking the stash. Got Emerson and Twain both talking mad trash.
Flow like Poe,
I'm going hard on that tetrameter.
Flow like Poe,
I'm going hard on that tetrameter.
Flow like Poe,
I'm going hard on that tetrameter.
This is Lit Hop 101 with MC Edgar Allan Poe.
Flow like Poe,
I'm going hard on that tetrameter.
Flow like Poe,
I'm going hard on that tetrameter.
Flow like Poe,
I'm going hard on that tetrameter.
If you don't know, now you know. Iambic assonance, bringing passion just like that. Cutting with the consonants, I kill it, I attack. Alliterating awesomely, amazing, add the energy. Pentameter is popping with the literary entropy. I'm on these spondies, dactylic swagger. The similes I drop are sharper than daggers. My metaphors are arrows, call me Katniss Everdeen. Hunger Games with the quill, illest MC ever seen. Check the Emily Dickinson slam, rhyme cause I'm spitting some. Strange and creepy magnificence, 19th century citizen. Hella press while I'm getting some darker than Charles Dickinson. Gory stories I've written them, teenage corpses I'm kissing them. Cause the ladies I'm missing them and I've influenced Eminem. With the Hobercore flavor, so call me Jonathan Livingston. Got that onomatopoeia popping off in the classroom. Bringing poetry to life with these literary rap tunes.
Flow like Poe,
I'm going hard on that tetrameter.
Flow like Poe,
I'm going hard on that tetrameter.
Flow like Poe,
I'm going hard on that tetrameter.
This is Lit Hop 101 with MC Edgar Allan Poe.
Flow like Poe,
I'm going hard on that tetrameter.
Flow like Poe,
I'm going hard on that tetrameter.
Flow like Poe,
I'm going hard on that tetrameter.